My name is Sam, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Pacific Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers and a main speaker. The first 10-minute speaker is Marion Kay.
Hi, I'm Marianne, and I'm an alcoholic. And I forgot to wear my watch tonight. Rhonda, will you wave at me when there's 2 minutes to go so I can wind it up? I used to drink, you guys. I started when I was 18 years old. It was on a double date, and I'd probably drank before, but I'd never gotten drunk before, and I made such a fool out of myself. But I did go to work the next day because I just started that, and it went that way the whole drinking time. But I remember one of the guys that was a student there who was taking a brush-up course to renew his license or something. But anyway, he came up to me and he said, I heard about how you acted last night when you were drinking, and it could be that you're one of those people who just shouldn't drink. And my response to him was, yes, but. And I started defending my right to drink from the very beginning. I graduated from beauty school. I went off and got a job, and I started drinking consistently and making a fool. I never was able really to drink successfully. I almost always, every time I drank, made a fool out of myself. So I came back to Owine, which is where I grew up in Iowa. Nobody's ever heard of that probably. That's where my folks were, and I got a job. I quit hairdressing because I was no good at it, and I got a job at the country club, the Elks Country Club, serving alcohol and food, and I loved it, and I knew that that was going to be what I was going to do for the rest of my life, and it almost was. My dad was sitting with me one night, and he said, you can live any way you want to, but if you're going to live here at home, you have to live in a way that doesn't embarrass us. And so I knew I was going to have to stop drinking, and it went fine. And I made plans, and I moved to Las Vegas. I wanted to become a starlet. And I figured that if I moved to Las Vegas and maybe got a job in a chorus line, that I would be discovered by somebody and taken to Hollywood and made into a movie star. I literally believed that. I made plans for that as if it was realistic. But I got there, and then I got realistic, and I got a job downtown in a bingo parlor. Because I had to go to work. And then I started drinking again, and the next thing you know, stuff happened. But I was a good worker, so they kept me on. But I've been in jail in Las Vegas a couple times. I hadn't been in Las Vegas too long before I was put in a county hospital mental facility for a month. And then one other time I was there for a week, I got sent there from jail, and another time overnight. So my Las Vegas time was bad, but I left out of sanity, because I left to get away from the crazy boyfriend who was really dangerous. And then I moved to Southern California because I didn't know where else to go. I surely didn't want to go home, and I didn't know what else to do. So I was seeing a psychiatrist, and he suggested Santa Monica or Malibu. And I chose Santa Monica, and I'm so glad because here I am to this day. I've never lived anywhere but Santa Monica. And I drank until 5 days after my 29th birthday. I've been in jail. I didn't go to the Nut House too long. I was in overnight, I think, here in Southern California. But I was in jail here a couple of times. But I finally, one day, I remember thinking, I was coming home from work after, because I always made myself go to work. I was coming home from work, and I was thinking about going over to Pete's Wilshire House, which is where I drank, which was on the Wilshire Boulevard. And well, do you want to go over to Pete's or do you want to call AA? Because I had, in the morning, it had occurred to me, why don't you try AA? And I went upstairs and I called 26 and Broadway. That was a phone that was listed in the phone book, 26 and Broadway with the number. And that was I knew I could get there on the bus. I didn't drive. I knew I could get there on the bus. So I called 26 and Broadway. I can remember saying, how do you go about joining up? And I got there, and they were nice to me, and somebody gave me a ride home. And I read the literature and I slept the night through, and I hadn't slept the night through, and I couldn't remember. I was so surprised when I woke up, and it was actually the morning. And I went to work that day, and my folks, I'd called them and told them I was going to go to AA, I thought, and they called to see how it went. And that's how I got started. I'm one of the very fortunate ones who got here and stayed. And I didn't get a sponsor right away, but eventually I sort of gravitated toward the Tuesday night meeting at the Pacific Group, which was what we now do on here, the Pacific Group meeting. And Clancy was, you know, a big deal there and everything. And I started going to that, and I eventually got asked Clancy to be my sponsor. And it's because I wanted a sponsor, but by the same token, I never thought of it until recently. I've been thinking, reminiscing, you know how you do after you've been sober for a while, you reminisce. And I was reminiscing about my early sobriety. And I have a feeling that one of the reasons I asked Clancy to be my sponsor was so I could have a birthday party. Because he used to have birthday parties. He used to have birthday parties for his sponsee at his home on 1212 Slate Creek on Saturday night after the meeting. And I'm pretty sure I thought that, and he did, you know, but he became my sponsor. But he said, one of the things he did say to me was, he said, you can't argue with me. And I said, no, I won't. And then he asked me, he said, I think it's time for you to learn to drive a car. This was a while after that. And the problem I brought to him had nothing to do with transportation. And I said, well, Clancy, I can't drive. I'm too nervous and high strung. And he said, I think you're too crazy to decide what you can do and what you can't do. That's my job, and I think you're sane enough to call the driving school and ask them to send you an instructor. And I couldn't deny that, and I did learn to drive a car, and it was just until recently I let it go. I'm 81 years old, and I'm just a little bit, I'm just off enough that I don't think I should drive anymore. And so, but I drove for years, and I even got where I drove back and forth to Iowa. And it's almost time to quit. I have been so grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous and so super, super grateful for you guys in the Pacific Group. You have no idea what you have done for me. I'm an odd woman. My real name is Looney, and I should have kept it. Because Mary Ann Looney would certainly fit me as well as it did when I was a kid. But when I did tell you this, I think that the psychiatrist said, you've got all the trouble you need, why don't you call yourself something else? So, but my real name is Looney, and for many years I lived up to it, and I'm getting a little senile now, so we could go back again, but no, I'm going to stick with it. Listen, you guys, I'm so grateful, and thank you for the people who asked me. I appreciate our beloved Clancy for sponsoring me, and Pat Y is taking me on now, and she takes my phone calls, and I am a little bit, just a little senile, not bad, but obviously if I can see it, it's not that bad yet, but she takes my phone calls, and all the guys and girls who call me up and talk to me about themselves and ask me, you know, my opinions, if I do have people that I sponsor, and I'm so grateful for that, and I think my time is up, but I just love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love you guys. I love this Wednesday night meeting, and I absolutely love it here in the building, two blocks away from where I live. How much better could it get than that? Thank you.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Harvey P.
I'm Harvey, and I'm an alcoholic, and I'm grateful to be, as my sponsor used to say, safe and sane and sober. And I want to thank Mary for asking me to speak, because it's customary to thank the secretary if you ask to speak. I have been sober since March the 1st, 1975. That's when I got to the bus station down at 6 in Los Angeles Street, because that's where the bus ended. And I didn't really know where Clancy worked, but everybody on the streets did. They said he lives right up there at the corner of 4th and L.A., that's a midnight mission. So I went up there, and he took me into the midnight mission. I came out here to see Chuck Chamberlain, but Chuck was in Laguna, was in London at the time. I'd heard Clancy, Chuck, and Mike Ross and some other people talk at a conference in Texas, and I thought, well, this is the way AA was. But I was in the service at the time. I had I'd been had two hitches in the Marine Corps, been kicked out both times for drinking. This is my second hitch in the Army. And my sponsor, I had to go, they had sent me to do something about my drinking. And my sponsor at the time was a guy named Bill Prothero, who was sponsored by a guy named Cersei Whaley. Bill had been sober at that time, 26 years, that was 1972. And he'd been, he'd known Evan, he'd known Bill, and I didn't know any of these names. But anyway, this guy was a soft-spoken, quiet guy. He seemed to have some kind of power over me that I didn't understand. I'd been in the military a bunch of times. I knew how to work the system, and I knew I was a sergeant two or three times, and I went to Vietnam twice. The first time I was in Vietnam, I got medevaced out as an acute chronic alcoholic back to Charleston Naval Hospital. I was in the Marine Corps. And I finished out that time in the Marine Corps, and I joined the Army because I felt guilty about being medevaced out of Vietnam. So I went back over there in the Army, and got some trouble, and the sergeant says, we're going to give you a choice, Harvey. Put your ass in jail or you can start flying. So I went down and drew some flight gear, and I flew as a flight engineer on a Chinook for $1,200. I came back from Vietnam. And anyway, I'm jumping around, but I got sober in the Midnight Mission in 1975. And Clancy was he was a honcho down there, so I figured, might as well get him to be my sponsor. And Skid Row in those days was great. It was just a bunch of old white guys, old winos, one black guy and one Mexican. And it was just like being in the military. I mean, there was no rules in the mission. If you got drunk, they threw you out. They had an expression called roll them up. And they'd roll all your stuff up and throw it out on the sidewalk. And I didn't get rolled. Anyway, he says, I was sober about 13 and a half months. And he says, I didn't write down your sobriety date. And anyway, I'm glad Nancy Marsh is here because she bullied him into giving me a first-year party. And anyway, I got out of mission at 14 months and went to work for a movie producer for a while, and it didn't work out. And I did a lot of things. I ended up working at the central office. I was broke, borrowing money from Clancy for the third time to pay my rent. And he says, get your ass up to the central office. I need somebody to work up there. So I didn't want to go. I knew David Hall. I'd done a lot of general service work, and I worked up there as a clerk. And it was a regular job, I was waiting for my friend to get a movie to get back into Hollywood, but he died, and we had a contract with Burt Lancaster, and Burt died. So anyway, I worked at the central office for 31 years, and it was the best job I ever had. And I was able to do service in AA, and I'm a pretty good talker, so I recruited a bunch of people to help me out down there. Bob Kaplan was one of them. He's dead, and we had a bunch of Jewish guys, and they called it the Jew Mafia. Anyway, we were rocking and rolling for a long time. I used to order $30,000 of big books at one whack, and credit cards and credits, and we did well, one of the first things we did was we got a certified CPA that only did 501c3s, and every piece of financial information went to this guy, so I'd call up, want to know about money, I'd just say, here's our report. Anyway, again, I'm grateful to Mary for asking me to talk, and I'm grateful to be here. It's good to see my friend Matt, and thank you.
Our main speaker tonight is Matt J.
Matt Johnson, alcoholic. Sid, did you stand up? Okay, yeah, that's all. I want to thank Mary for inviting me. I'm always honored to be asked to come and participate at the Pacific Group. It's one of those things where I'm kind of a reluctant participant, in my own sobriety. I'm really stoked to be asked. And then when the day gets here, I think, shit, the Dodgers are on, and I could be playing Call of Duty and watching the Dodger game. Jeez. So, but like I said, I'm really happy. What? Call of Duty? Or the Dodgers? The other thing is, it's so funny to be here. It's my dad used to talk, and he used to talk about the lights in the eyes, and I swear with masks, that's all you got now, right? It's like, I can't. I have no, like, you know, memory for anything. I look at people and I think, God, they look familiar, but I can't tell with a mask on. So, but I'm happy to be here, and I shout out to Johnny, Mr. 60, and so glad that he's here. And I want to thank the guys that I sponsor in the class of 73, and, you know, for none of them being here. And they're also older on Zoom, I guess. I don't know what the hell. But I'm just glad to be here. And I'm not that clever, but so I got a canned pitch and I better just get to it. So, and it's what time? It's 35, it's what, 12 minutes? And who do I look at over here? Okay. Oh, yeah, and there's lights. So I come from a normal family. Both my parents were alcoholics. I was a sickly child, and by the time I did go to school, found out that I'm severely dyslexic and ADD, or vice versa. And I was just always, you know, I was either sick or, and I was also one of those ones that I was accident prone, and I couldn't walk down the street that I wouldn't, you know, get bit by a dog or step in glass, or I ran across the street and got hit by a car, and you know, just always some kind of thing like that are going on. And then I would go to school and not fit in, and and I'd always be afraid that somebody would see my, you know, I kind of have caveman writing, you know, kind of stuff. And And I'd always be afraid that somebody wouldn't see that. And I would just look at mine and look at theirs and I'd wad it up and just shove it in the desk. So I never did anything. And there'd be the test time and I would just have an asthma attack and go home. And that's pretty much how I went through school. And but I was the class clown and they always put me through. And I never flunked a class, which was kind of crazy. And in the seventh grade, with the help of a friend, I wrote a pornographic essay and got expelled from school. And kind of changed everything. I ran away. I got caught right away, and they took me to the chief of police at Torrance, you know, who told me what I was going through was puberty, and pretty soon it'd be growing hair under my arms and on my legs, and everything would be okay. And he didn't know I was going to be a late bloomer. And the other thing that they did is they took me to a psychologist who was a group therapist, and it was great. And I sat in this little group and she was a dream analyzer. And I liked that so much, I would make up dreams for her to analyze. You know, it's like, you know, I just wanted to hear about me, and, you know, which really hasn't changed in that, you know, but I was either inferior or superior, you know, it was one of those things. So I did that, but that gave me notoriety. You know, I was the kid that was getting out of school to go see a shrink twice a week. And, the thing that happened there was other than being in the fantasy way before Disneyland type of thing, fantasy land, I started escaping into sports. I found out that I was okay at sports and I could play, and I escaped in it, and it was the greatest thing. And I would just go to school for recess, basically, because I just wanted to play. Needless to say, the Pacific Group didn't, you know, help perpetuate that one. And I don't really remember my first drink. There was always alcohol around the house. My dad was a 2-quart-a-day vodka drinker, full-blooded Swede. We never talked when he was sober. And then he'd start drinking and didn't want to talk. And then we just would ignore him. And my mother was a 2-drink scotch, you know, on the rocks with some club soda. And she was, we didn't know, we know now, but we didn't know then, but she was bipolar or schizophrenic or something, but she would have psychotic cases. But she would have those 2 drinks and then her head would twist like Linda Blair, you know, and she'd just go, and she was the violent, profane one. You know, she'd be running around slapping us and shit. And, you know, my dad and I are both 6-foot Swedes, you know, 6'2". And she'd like, this lamp doesn't go here. And, you know, the stuff like that. So do I get one of these waters? There's like waters all over the place, right? I get this one or? Man, I'm thirsty. How about you guys? Fuji water. So. So, I'll just leave the lid off it, right? Just like the Ripple bottles. And so, like I said, she was kind of the she'd go crazy, and we just didn't know. And she was also suicidal and stuff like that. So we would deal with that. But that's their story. I don't remember my first drink. There was always alcohol around the house. I started getting drunk when I was about 15. And then I started in the drugs when I was about 16. I started dealing dope around 17. And I'm kind of a late bloomer. I didn't start sniffing glue until I was about 18. And I drove Sid by, now it's a metro station, but I worked at the Sears right over here in Santa Monica in the automotive section. And I handled all the tire repairs, you know, kind of stuff, because they used that great Mickey Big Mouth Sears vulcanizing glue, you know. I mean, I would just twist that top off and just sniff that until my knees buckled, you know. I mean, that's and the thing about it was, is I never realized it, but it didn't matter. I just wanted to get out of where I was. And all of those years back then, like I said, I never read. I always heard the voice over my shoulder telling me, you don't fit in, you don't belong, you're stupid. These people are so much smarter, and she's going to find out how smart you know, how dumb you are, and you know that kind of stuff. And I always had that going on one side, you know, on my head, and then and then the other side, I had sports, and I was killing it, and I was just, you know, I would just enjoy it, and it was just always that kind of thing going on. So, I graduated from high school. So my folks, my dad, like I said, was 2 quarts a day. He liked to listen to the records. And he liked to listen to the same song over and over again. And he liked stuff like Earl Garner and, you know, Duke Ellington and, you know, Count Basie. And he had all the 78s, and he would play those. And he would like one little tickle of the ivory, right? And he would grab that needle and go and bring it back and play it. And then he'd play it over again and again and again and again. And then he would make the big mistake with my mother. And he would say, what did you think of that, you know, that song, honey? And she goes, and she'd go like this, you know, and she goes, I'll show you. And she'd walk over to the record player and just start breaking records, man. And it didn't matter if it was Earl Garner or Jethro Tull or, you know, kind of stuff. She would just rip through them all. And then there was we had a backyard there, and everything would just be out in the backyard. So if I'd come home loaded and ready for a little, you know, Jethro, and there would be, it should break everything in a green, you know, album case, and you know, so whatever. But that's what she would do, and it would be crazy shit like that. So I would just, what I would do is always just disable my father's car, and so he couldn't drive, and then I'd get in my mother's car, and I would drive around, and just get loaded medicinally, and I did that and then I'd park in the driveway. My mom would come out about 5 a.m. I would be sleeping in the front seat. My arm would fall off the armrest. My head would fall off the armrest. And then I'd wake up and I'd go in and get a couple more hours, and my dad would take me to school. And that's how I went through my junior and senior years. It was just kind of crazy. So I graduated high school in 69, only because it was 69. And, otherwise, I'd have been gone. I just thought, I got to have that diploma. And but I graduated. I told a guy, I'd never read a book. And he said, this year? And I said, no, ever. I never read a book. I thought I had fooled him, you know. I thought I was the one that, you know, I got away with something, you know. And I never realized that I was the one that paid the tab for that. And I apologize for you guys over here. Kind of a right-handed speaker. I always kind of just looked at... So I always mean to look over there, but I just don't. And it's so funny. You know what? It's so funny to be standing with pants on, and speaking. You know, I'm usually on a white shirt with a tie and swimming trunks, right? You know, at a Zoom meeting, and they don't know the difference unless you stand up. So and I try not to. So. And the other thing is, I think it's funny with having to wear a mask all the time. I've been on this keto diet, right? You know, so I've dropped some weight. But every time I put a mask on, it tastes like, you know, or it smells like beef jerky. You know, I mean, I gotta get some more masks. You know, kind of thing. So So that's how it went. I graduated. I just started dealing dope. It was kind of crazy. And my dad, actually my mother had one of her psychotic things and tried to commit suicide, and it was crazy. And, you know, it had started off with Christmas, you know, she had dragged a Christmas tree, flock, blue lights and flock and, you know, bulbs and everything out the back door and threw it out on the 23rd because Christmas wasn't going her way. And then by New Year, she was committing suicide, or Christmas, she was committing suicide. So they took her to that psychologist that I'd seen there 5 years earlier, and that psychologist recommended that she see a doctor who recommended AA. And they both came, and my dad got sober in December of 69, and my mom in January 1st of 70, and they both stayed sober, and my dad got Clancy for a sponsor right away. And so I started coming to, I went to the yard when I was 18 years old. And in fact, they couldn't get two teams together. It was the West Side God Shouters against all comers. And I got to play on the all comers team, and because they didn't have enough, you know, people. And then they would go across the street and play a little volleyball, and that was it. But it left an impression in my mind, and I thought it was great for my dad. And he'd always been a loner. You know, we're a family of loners. There's a joke, but I don't have time. So it's a great, you know, a Scandinavian joke, but you guys don't get to hear it. So we never had friends. We never hung out with people. We were always loners. And my dad all of a sudden had friends. He had, you know, Keith Carpenter and Marv Rosenthal and Chuck Nesbitt and Bill Brogan and all these guys, you know, they got sober in 66, 67, 68. So it was all that, you know, it was just really fun. And I thought that was great for him. And, you know, I was glad that he had found it. And my mom got Miriam for a sponsor, and she was, you know, and hung out with Millie was her best friend, and she hung out with her. So they had both found this thing, and I thought that's great. But, you know, I started just, you know, I was still just getting loaded every chance I could. By the time I was 21, I had, I was getting arrested. I was crashing cars. I was blacking out, and I was suicidal. And I could feel myself being pulled towards kind of the lunatic fringe. I thought, I'm turning into my mother here, you know, kind of stuff. And I was afraid of that, you know. But I thought, I'll just kill myself. And one night, Marianne was talking about it. I'm kind of like, with Marianne and Harvey, I'm kind of the young people's favorite tonight, right? So kind of felt fun about that. But my dad took me to the Tuesday night Ohio Street meeting, which was Pacific Group at the time. I met a man there named Art Cole, who changed my life. Art, he said, if you change your actions, your attitude will change. And I thought, what an amazing line. You know, I never heard, you know, I'd always been lectured all my life. You know, when you're a slug at school, you're always getting pulled in, or, you know, at fight or get whatever, you're get pulled in and lectured, right? But when he said that, I thought, you know, it almost made it sound like it was up to me, you know, that I could do something about it. And so Art said, here's my number, give me a call, I'll give you an action to take. And I gave him a call, and I didn't get sober right away. You guys probably remember the drought of 72 when they all started spraying everything with Paraquat. You know, I'd kind of put down on everything, and, you know, I was, my life at that time was based on mantras that I'd gotten from songs, right? I'm a spinoff of the 60s. I loved everything that had Eric Clapton or Stephen Stills in, you know, kind of thing. But I lived by what we, you know, the song lines that you heard, and, you know, like, I want to take you higher, or, you know, I feel funny and I don't know why. Excuse me, why I kiss this guy, you know, stuff like that. But the one that I really liked was that song by Little Feet called Willing, and it's, give me weed, whites, and wine, and show me a sign, and I'll be willing. And I took that as my mantra, and that's what I lived on. You know, I liked amphetamines for the motivation. You know, I liked to just, you know, they made me spontaneous, and I liked that, you know, kind of stuff. I wanted to do something. I'm kind of a born slug, and I'm retired now, and it hasn't gotten any better. I'm like a slug with a Barca lounger now, you know, kind of stuff. So, but you know, you would get that and you would start, you know, it would just start, you know, coming on. And then, you know, I like that feeling you got. And it wasn't that your eyes were bugging out, but it was like your face is being, you know, or you're grinning and that your jaws are excreting, whatever. And then I would drink a little alcohol. I liked Ripple specifically. I liked a little Ripple, you know, the proverbial wines that I've never seen a grape. And I would drink, you know, Ripple or Spinata or Red Mountain, and just to kind of loosen my jaws and to give me a little spit. And then I would, you know, and then I would smoke pot to appreciate the arts, right? You know, so you could go to a B comedy and laugh your head off when no one else is, you know, kind of stuff, until somebody behind you goes, "Hey, shut up," you know, kind of stuff. And so I, you know, that's kind of how I liked it. And but like I was saying, by this time I'd kind of the fun had just fallen out of everything. You know, it was just like dark. And I came here. Art gave me this. I started calling Art. I didn't get sober right away. I was still drinking and, you know, stopping for one and then getting drunk. And I would stop for one and get drunk. And finally, I just stopped one. And I couldn't drive that night for some reason. I called Art. I said, "I can't, you know, can I try this AA? I want to see if this works." And I really didn't want to come to AA because I'd been here and seen the people here. And although they were great for Hank, you know, I thought, shit, it wasn't what I was shooting for. And he said, "Yeah, you can come." And so I started going to meetings. I stayed sober for 38 days and snapped out of it and realized I was only 21 and thought, what am I doing here? Everybody was fat, bald, and wore glasses. I had LASIKs, but... So, you know, it was one of those things where I thought, I don't fit in here. And I went out and got loaded. And I got picked up by my buddy, and he had a baggie. He had it full of buds. And basically, so I was rolling a joint here, and I had a bud in one hand and a bud in the other. And I started getting loaded on a Friday night. And next thing I knew, it was Sunday, and I was stuck to a Naga High chair. And I thought, this isn't it either. And I called up Art and I said, "Can I come back to AA?" And he said, "Yeah, you can." And I met him there, and that was May 27th, 1973. And I haven't been, you know, haven't had a thing since. Been sober ever since. So I celebrated 48 years in May. And that's right, huh? Like, I mean, it isn't 60 or 50, Nancy, but I mean, it's like separate. So, but I came. I didn't do anything. I sat in the back. The funny thing is this was our regular Thursday night meeting, and I remember being here. In fact, I brought my friend Cecil here the first time. I met him at 26 and Broadway, and I said, "You got to come over to the Pacific Group and meet all the young people," you know, kind of stuff. And you know, when we were all young. And I hated the young people. I didn't even like the young people. You know, I liked the old guys and stuff. But I brought him over and introduced him here. And I sat down after that and realized I knew everybody in here. And I felt something that I had never felt that I remembered. And that is that I did something for somebody else and got this feeling about it, you know, and realized that that's really the secret of this whole thing, is about giving it away not, you know, the altruism, not expecting anything in return. And Cecil and I have been friends ever since. I got 48. He's got 47. He just turned 47 in July. But you know, everything, you know, all this area here, just, you know, Marianne was talking about being nostalgic. You know, it just makes you go back and you know, I'm in the, you know, this is kind of like Shangri-La for me back in when I, you know. Fortunately, I have selective memory, right? You know, because I don't remember all the shitty things, but I remember, you know, all the great stuff, all the people coming in, all the softball. You know, I went out and got loaded and came back, and I basically hopped into that invisible boat and started rolling. And Clancy was sitting right here, and he leaned over and he goes, "Have you ever played third base, kid?" And I went, "Yes." And And I was in, man. And I, you know, the great thing about the Pacific Group was it was all about this, for me, was all about the sports. You know, you kind of joke around. When they talk in the Big Book, we take this kit of spiritual tools and put it at the new people's feet. Well, I just kind of kicked that out of the way. It's like, get out of here. And Pacific Group throws a kit of action tools at your feet and tells you, go get a pair of pants and a white shirt and a tie and get ready to go on the panel and, you know, make sure that you mop or you've got a commitment doing, you know, something like that. And I did that. And the other thing that I always loved about the Pacific Group, it was competitive sobriety. It was kind of like, well, Tim, how many commitments do you have? You know, stuff like that, right? And, you know, so we were always doing, you know, we were always doing that kind of stuff. And, you know, how many meetings do you go into and how many babies you sponsor and what step are you on and all that, you know, we were always doing those kind of things, which was prodding us on. And what's your sobriety? And you knew it was like the conveyor belt of sobriety here, because you would get in line and I had Shirley Fraze in front of me and Mike Carey right behind me. So you knew where you stood in your line too. You knew the people that had the sobriety and that were part of the class of 73. So, and you know, we knew everybody. It's kind of crazy, huh? That's like nobody. Where are all those guys? So, and you know, and I just did the deal, and I got in here, and I didn't, you know, I wasn't a rocket to stardom. I didn't, you know, I couldn't read. My Big Book, I got sober in 73. My Big Book says 74. I finally bought one in 74. I felt like I had to have one. And but I never read it, and it wasn't until the Big Book came out on tape that I listened to it. Although I did, you know, I should say I did teach myself how to read, reading Edgar Rice Burroughs and Louis Amour books, you know, kind of stuff. Tarzan, I love Tarzan, and John Carter on Mars, and I started reading, and I got good enough where I could read the sport. You know, I could read a box score, but I could never read the article about the people, you know, kind of stuff. And I could start to read the articles. And so, you know, and now I'm like a whiz, you know, swiping through there. I'm like a kid, right? I just swipe through now and check out all my little Google sports stuff. So, but at that time, I did that, but I wasn't, you know, I was like, okay, yeah, I took the first step. The second step, Art Cole was a power grade. You know, I went to Art Cole. He invited me over to his house. We sat down. He had a desk, this nice big desk. He was an unemployed marketing guy and never had, I don't know that he ever really had a job. I don't know what, I never knew what Art ever did. But he took me, you know, but he sat down and he took a picture and, or he took a piece of paper and he wrote a circle and he put Matt. And then he put little balloons up, and he put job and, you know, goals and stuff like that. And I thought, this man is the smartest man I've ever met, you know, kind of stuff. And, you know, so I was so happy with that, you know, because he gave me that paper. And I thought, you know, he asked me to set my goals, and I wanted to be a good surfer and a good member of society was the only thing I could think of. You know, I mean, I didn't know any. You know, I was so shocked. You know, I was one of those guys that, you know, I always wanted to be a part of something until I got here, and then I always made sure I kept you at arm length, you know, because I didn't want you to really know how jacked up I was. You know, I mean, how, you know, this guy's really messed up. And, you know, so, but I did that. So I considered Art my power grade and myself. We were all part of the Pacific Group. And, there, you know, so I, you know, I mean, as far as step three went, and, I finally wrote my fourth step, and I had all this lying, cheating, stealing, you know, stuff. You know, I did that. We didn't do the columns. We did the questions, and I cried when I read it to Art, and I thought, this is humiliating. Is this how, you know, is this really what it's supposed to be all about? And I did that. And then, of course, I was 21 years old. You know, I didn't have any character defects. I just skipped right over 6 and 7 and went right into amends. Had to make amends to Sears and for ripping them off, and did that. And then, you know, 10 and 11, you know, that was like getting a little, it was a little too out there for me at that point. I understood, you know, making immediate amends, but prayer and meditation still kind of torqued me. And then the 14th step, I was, I, you know, I won't even go into the 13th, but the 14th, the 12th step, I ended up doing the best I could. And for some reason, I was lucky there. And, you know, and I started working with guys. And then we started going, you know, working the books, working the steps, going through the stuff. And my life started to change. And, you know, and I think I you know, there's guys here. A guy I think probably online, Randy, who I sponsored for almost 44 years. And, you know, I mean, he was there from the very beginning, but I, you know, I tried to do the deal the best I could, and I wasn't very good at it. I sat in the back, took inventories. It was always, Norm Alpe used to always talk about, if you hear a line you like, steal it. Give the guy credit three times, and then it's yours. And we would sit in the back and try to make up talks with stolen lines, you know, kind of stuff. I mean, I couldn't listen to anybody up here, but I could try to make up a story, you know, and we would do that. I was at a meeting and I saw her at the meeting and I prayed for her and got her. Do I need to say any more? Right? I had two beautiful children with her, but it was always, you know, it was never, you know, it was never right. And there, you know, I painted the red flag screen, and so did she. But we hung in there for 13 years, and then we divorced. And I was 20 years sober when we divorced, and it affected, you know, I went all nuts on my ego, you know, kind of stuff. It was like, oh my God, here I am with 20 years, and she's divorcing me, and I went into victim mode. And it was all about her. It was never about what my part in it was. It was always about, you know, my guys would call me up. It's really funny. I lost a dozen guys during that time because they'd call up and go, you know, I'm having some trouble with work. And I go, you think you got trouble? You know what she did to me this time? You know, kind of stuff. And then I'd go off. And then I'd just hear, I got to go, Matt, you know, and it would be click, you know, kind of stuff. And needless to say, I lost a few, and the smart ones, I guess. And and it took me about 4 years, and I had to go back through, and I had to do, you know, I had to look at my part in it. Surprising, you know. And I realized that there's, you know, kind of the big things that I never paid attention to was the parts about, you know, your part in it, but the thing about, you know, forgiveness and, you know, acceptance and forgiveness. You know, those things never entered into my, you know, I'm a Viking, man. We don't, you know, it's like I would just run through and, you know, or a linebacker, you know, if people were in the way, just get out of the way. I had a total disregard for other people's feelings. I didn't care about what they thought, you know, kind of stuff. And so I had to learn to do, you know, to be, you know, I had to learn how to be more caring. I had to be more, you know, more understanding. I had to practice patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. You know, I mean, when I got here, I wanted you to give me the, you know, a spiritual experience and or give me the, you know, the promises. You know, I didn't want to work for them. You know, I identify with that line where it says, half measures avail us nothing. We stood at the turning point. I camped at the turning point. You know, it's like I'm a procrastinator, man. I'm not going to do all that, you know, kind of stuff. I don't, you know, I mean, that you're going all in when you follow the rest of that and you get into that. And, you know, I mean, it literally took me years to realize that. And the same thing with, you know, like I said about the 10th, you know, the 11th step, I never did any prayer and meditation. It wasn't until later that I really got into doing meditating, you know, kind of stuff. And, you know, and now I do it every day to, you know, listening to, you know, Indian flute and Tibetan bowls and then A Vision for You, you know, kind of stuff. And it's the greatest thing in the world. And I feel so great after I do it. And, you know, so I, you know, I'm just, you know, I mean, but I got divorced. I did that. I went through it. I was, you know, sitting here after about 4 years and I had kind of gotten my, you know, back together and I thought, now I'm kind of ready to have a relationship. And I think, I'd like somebody with, you know, it's kind of young, maybe, you know, low mileage, no puppies, living close to Santa Barbara, right? You know, kind of thing. And I came down to Vince Joe's party, 25th party, and I looked across the room and I saw Stephanie there, and I just thought, wow. And she came over and talked to me. And I've got a job. I was working selling VW parts. You know what the great thing about selling VW parts? VW. There's like no spelling involved with that baby. And it was all part numbers, and I could do part numbers. And so I'm negotiating million-dollar deals with part stores and stuff like that. And Stephanie came over, and I just started yammering. I couldn't think of a thing to say. And she goes, "You still up in Santa Barbara?" And I go, "Yeah." And she goes, "Oh, great, okay." And, you know, it's like one of those things. I thought, I got to call her. And I got to shout out to Lester, my niece over here. And, you know, I said, "How do you think Stephanie's doing?" She goes, "How do you think she's doing? She's divorced and she's got twins, you know, kind of twin, you know, three-year-olds. How do you think?" And I thought, oh, okay. But I called her up and asked her out. And, I went down, and she goes, "God, you sure you want to come all the way down here?" And I go, "God, I love to drive." And and we started dating for a while. She goes, "You know, I got twins." I go, "I love kids." And you know, and so we had a whirlwind deal, and I moved her up to Santa Barbara, and we got married, and we've been married for 23 years. And I know, huh? I always like to say I've been married almost 40 years gross. But 23 to Stephanie, and but we've had a great marriage. You know, we blended these two kids together. You know, our two families together, and I had two, and she had two, and they clicked. And you know, they're great kids. All of them. You know, we've had a few issues and stuff like that, but they've all been really great kids. The girls all got degrees, and the boys are friggin' experts in Halo or something. I don't know what. You know, it's like. You know, it's like they got hunched shoulders from, you know, playing games. And I get that when I fly a lot, you know, kind of stuff, you know, but they, you know, whatever. But but they're great kids, and I love those guys. And but now they're all working. They're all doing well. And it's like amazing. We're totally amazed. And Stephanie's doing good. She was like a newcomer when I married her. She only had 10 years. And but now we, you know, I got 48, she's got 33. We got about 80 something years running around the house at any time. And so it's kind of, you know, it's kind of funny, but I know who has to make the coffee every morning. I do it. And or who wears the trousers, right? I know. So I've been in a really lucky it's really funny because I, like I said, I'm so nostalgic when I come here and I see all the faces, all the people I know, and and love here, and I've been blessed. I don't know why I've been blessed. I'm a freak. I got 48 years. I'm 68 or 69 years old. I got 48 years of sobriety. I mean, you know, how did that happen? We were talking earlier with I don't even remember, and you know, over here. But we were talking about getting sober at, you know, 18, 19, 20, and Kenna and a friend, you know, and Leslie, and shit, I can't remember. But we got sober, you know, people used to come up to me and go, "You're so lucky you got sober so young. You have the rest of your life ahead of you." And I used to sit there and think, yeah, great, 30 or 40 more years of this shit. You know, I mean, it's like, it didn't seem much to shoot for, right, you know, but... But I got a year and a half, and I'll be 50 if I make it, you know, kind of stuff. And I'm, you know, it's like a goal, you know, it's like something that I want. And sobriety is something that I want. I like it today, and I like everything that goes on around my life in AA. Five. Yep. Oh, three. Shouldn't I get a minute? You know, for every hour, or, you know, a minute I drove down here or something. Shouldn't? Or is it, no, oh, it's 30 seconds for every, or not even that, huh? So, you know, I, So I've been really lucky here. I I've had all these great experiences here. My life is really full, and I really do. I'm really blessed with a lot of great AA babies. I got babies. I'm surprised when they ask me. You know, I think really, you know, kind of stuff. Because I would ask you to be my sponsor. You know, kind of stuff. And everybody is smart and you know and successful and you know they're doing the deal and. You don't have to ask him. It's like, oh, okay, Steve. You know, it's like he's, you know, they all sponsor 50 guys, and you know, they're all, you know, I don't have to ask him. What's the deal? You know, well, how many meetings are you going to? How many guys are you working with? You know, kind of stuff. But I can tell you, the thing that I like the most is when I get a new guy and I get to sit down and go through the book with him and talk about the slender thread. You know, I love talking, you know, telling them, you know, who was Roland Hazard and what, you know, Ebby Thatcher did for us and, you know, Henrietta Cyberline. And, you know, I just, you know, all of that kind of stuff and how the bar was lowered. I think the great thing about Ebby was that when he told Bill, you know, it's like you just believe in a God of your own understanding. He lowered the bar so low, that, you know. Now, that's not to say that the bar is so low that there isn't alcoholics and still can get under it. You know, I mean, we know what to do there. You know, we'll fight it. But I've been blessed by, you know, I never believed in God. I believed in evolution and all that kind of stuff. But there's even an out for me in a sense where they talk about in the appendix. They said, you know, you find an unsuspecting inner resource. And I found that. And I'm of the educational variety. Everything that I in my life has grown on me because of the education. I never, you know, I mean, I was just lucky that I've been, you know, blessed by great sponsors. I've had these great guys who have always challenged me to do better. And they would always, down to the last minute. So, you know, they would always direct me in the right direction. And that's really what I try to do with my guys. And, you know, and I've been lucky there. What else can I say? I would just like to thank Mary again for inviting me and you all for listening. Thank you very much.
Celebrate birthdays at this meeting for every 365 days of continuous sobriety. We give a cake with the appropriate number of candles on it. And we define sobriety as freedom from alcohol, pills, pot, as Matt mentioned so much, or anything which affects you from the neck up. If you're a regular attender of this meeting and would like to take a cake with us, please see me at the door before the meeting. If you're taking a cake tonight, people are on the stage here lined up in order of sobriety. And if you are taking a cake online, email Kimberly K at birthdays@pacificgroupla.org by noon Wednesday deadline. Hybrid birthdays will be shown after the in-person birthdays at the meeting. We have a custom at the Pacific Group of donating $1 for each candle on our cake. At the end of the year, this candle money is our contribution to AA organizations worldwide. So see my assistants at the door when you sign up to take your cake. And if you're participating online, please arrange for this with our treasurer, Lon B, at treasurer@pacificgroup.org. And we are having some problems with funding, so if you could be generous, it would be wonderful for us right now. And now let's sing briskly and speak briefly. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear AAs. Happy birthday to you. Keep coming back. Okay. Our first birthday is for 3 years for Eliza M.
Eliza, alcoholic. I'd like to thank God, my sponsor Yvonne, my sober sisters, Caitlin, Clancy for the structure, and all of you.
Our second birthday is for 6 years for Michelle B.
Hi, Michelle, alcoholic. I want to thank my beautiful sponsor, Sarah. I want to thank God, PG, class of 2015, and all of you.
Our next birthday is for 7 years for Jason W.
Jason, alcoholic. Thank you, God. Thank you, Marty. Thank you, Class of 2014. Logan, Tyler 19, and Pacific Group. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you.
Our next birthday is for 11 years for Christopher H.
Christopher Alcoholic. I'd like to thank God, Clancy, Dave Wilson, and all of you.
Our next birthday is for 15 years for Molly B.
Oh, hi, everyone. I'm Molly Basler, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi. I want to thank Mary for giving me that cake and for her sponsorship, for Pacific Group, for Clancy and the structure, and Class of 2006, if anyone's out there. And just sharing this journey, Bill and Bob, and the 12 Steps. Thank you.
Our next birthday is for 32 years for Jerry J.
My name is Jerry Jones, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm very glad to be here tonight. Thank Thomas for the cake. Glad to be sober tonight. And it's been a long journey, but I made it through. And if you're new here tonight, just keep hanging in there. You can do it also. Again, thank you very much.
Good job. And our last in-person birthday is for a past secretary of the Pacific Group, Sharon C., for 46 years.
Thank you, Mary. My name is Sharon. I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to thank the Pacific Group for welcoming me here 46 years and 5 days ago. If you're new, you've hit the jackpot. I hope you stay. I'd like to thank my first sponsor, Janet, and then Ginny, and the incomparable Clancy I, for 37 years of teaching me the joy of service. And I'd especially like to thank my sponsor, Nancy M., for seamlessly inviting me into her life and teaching me about the joy of living. And thank you, Johnny, for coming every week. It means the world to me. Thank you for all the women I sponsor, the Force for Good, walking hand to hand and shoulder to shoulder into this beautiful way of life. I'd like to thank my loving God for the spark, the divine spark that I have, and all the blessings and love already on their way. Thank you.
And we have some Zoom birthdays. Our first Zoom birthday is for 28 years for Stephanie Y. from Australia. And her sponsor is Mary M. Oh, where's her picture? Was it here? Oh, okay. All right. Okay. 31 years for Charlie S. and his sponsor is Tom B. Thirty-one years for Joyce F., and her sponsor is Brenda W. And 57 years for Bob H., and he is giving his cake by Robert C., his brother. We have some special announcements tonight. Masks, you know, we just have to be gracious about